let's talk a bit about the bands that are playing, the true bands that are playing, the true metal bands that are playing this. What are kind of the biggest gets, in your opinions, that are playing this year? I know, KW, you've mentioned just like a ton of them. What are you like, I'm going to see this no matter what?
I put myself to work the Orchid shows because it kind of blows my mind how some of these bands, you know, they're just like rec center bands when I was a kid. And now it's like the amount of people that are stoked on it when it comes back. But mostly for me, like there's some, like I was saying earlier, there's just some, I can't even talk about them, I guess, right now, but there's just some bills that are like absolutely ridiculous. Like I could just say the obvious, you know, Burning Love's coming back and Orchid's coming back and whatever, and Concha Void's playing, you know, it's like, but the for me, it's like, there's just some lineups that are wild. And the way it's all laid out is you can kind of run around the city and see a few different things in one night and still just kind of be mind blown. I'm mostly excited for the lineups to just drop because some of these bills are absolutely wild. Also, Regana's like amazing. Me and KW kind of started this by putting on our own shows and they were all selling out. So we're like, I guess, you know, let's actually do the festival thing. But yeah, Regana's, I think, played two of our shows, maybe.
They played two of the four shows that we put on together.
Yeah. And it's like, they were great, but now it's, they're kind of getting a lot of wild recognition now. And it's just nice.
Much, I think,
it's
going to
be,
well,
it's going to be like a pinnacle show, I think, for them in Toronto. So it's going to be one of the ones to like see, but yeah, there's just still in Uniform also. I haven't seen Uniform in a while. That's a good, for me, that's, I love that band. So that's a great get for Toronto. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of Tumults. Their last show was wild. They did like a show at the Baby G, which was wild. And then, well, their record was coming out and then sold out a Lee show. And then now they're coming back and they're playing some nuts shows with us.
And for people who don't know Toronto venues, because this is a Montreal show, the Baby G is like smaller than Turbo House. So it's like 150 people, 175 capacity. Yeah. Lee's Palace is about 600 people. And they did those in 2 days and quickly go. And now they're going to be like, we can say they're going to be playing at the largest, one of the larger venues in town, which is really great. For me, I know I'm going to be running around the whole weekend. It's funny because we get to like, we booked all of these bands. So we're obviously excited for every single one of them to be there. And if I get to catch 10 minutes of music on any day, we'll be very, yeah, very lucky. I really want to catch a few minutes of Chain to the Bottom of the Ocean. That's a band that's named after a song by Thou. And I have a giant Thou tattoo. I'm a very big fan of that band. And their Chain to the Bottom of the Ocean's version of like suffocating sludge metal is just, it's kind of a, I want to feel it course through my entire body. That's a band I'm really excited to check out for a bit. Minuscule, I will absolutely be checking out. They're probably the least known act on the festival. It is a 14-piece choir from Niagara Falls who play these songs that pull at every single heartstring that you have. It's this wonderful woman named Laurel Minnis on ukulele and singing, and she trained an entire choir of people to sing with her. That's going to be gorgeous and blow a lot of people's minds and really change people's ideas of like what can be heavy, I think, because their inclusion to me, it was like really important to have them. And if I don't get a chance to see at least a few songs from Mike Scheit from Yob, I mean, the festival is named after a Yob song. So if I don't get a chance to see at least a few of his songs, I'll feel really disappointed in myself.
CJLO 1690 AM, Grade A Explosives. You are listening to an extended, long interview I did, which thanks, by the way, to both of the members, the representatives, the co-founders of Prepare the Ground, if I can talk with my mouth, for sitting down and spending some time chatting with me. I will thank them again at the end of the show, but I think it's important to show gratitude when you can and when it occurs to you, because sometimes it doesn't occur to you as quickly as it should. What you heard there before that part of the interview, which was part six, in case you're keeping track and taking names, was some Respire with Tempest off of Black Line. You can actually, if you can't make it over to Toronto to see Prepare the Ground, the festival, you can actually see Respire because they announced they're going to be playing at Casa del Popolo on the 31st, May 31st, which is the same day that this festival starts. So you can't be in both places at once. I mean, I guess you could if you cloned yourself, but then that brings in the ethical quandary of, if you make a clone of yourself, are you the same as that clone? Or are you two separate entities now? Deep, deep things we're at right now. Anyway, the point of this is not to talk about clones. The point of this is to talk about Prepare the Ground, which is not a clone. It's a single entity right now. It's a one, it's a zero-year-old baby that's going to be birthed to all of us on May 31st and going until June 2nd. And then I guess ritualistically sacrificed on June 2nd? I don't know. The metaphor is kind of losing its ability to describe this pretty quickly. Let's get into part 7 of this interview before I play some more music from this festival, because I want to be sure that I can get to all of the parts of the interview, because that's the most important part here. And there's still 3 more parts to go. I told you it was long. So let's, you know, all of you know, when I do this show, I like to make a big to-do about the business of music, because it is unethical most of the time and takes advantage of the artists which it feeds off of. So, you know, not great. Really should probably change that. But if it hasn't been changed from the birth of the music industry, I don't think it's going to be changing this year. But let's talk about something that is interesting about Prepare the Ground and business. I know you're like, oh, I don't want to talk about this, Andrew. Too bad. You're going to listen to it. Sit down, listen to it. Because I posed the question to them about Dice, which is who they are working with, and Ticketmaster. And, well, you know what, I'll just let you listen to that conversation, and then we will go from there. We'll get some music in there. I promise I will throw some more music in between this and the next parts of the interview. So keep it locked. Grade A Explosives, CJLO, 1690 AM. Here is the co-founders of Prepare the Ground. Keep it locked. Grade A Explosives. Enjoy. Let me switch a little bit on topics here, because I noticed that you guys are using Dice for ticketing. And for those that aren't in the know, which included me until basically this afternoon, they're sort of an independent ticketing service that's, I don't know how well they're succeeding, but they're trying to go up against things like Ticketmaster. I'm interested as kind of your thoughts as both promoters and as bands. Do you think that what Dice is doing is a fix for the system that's in place now for ticketing, or is it just some sort of a band-aid that's kind of being placed over it to try and deal with the likes of like Ticketmaster, which has monopolized basically all of North America's large venues at this point?
Yeah, there's a lot to say about what you just said. I'm going to start with Dice. I got like, Dice was already doing very well in the UK and the US. Canada, we're one of the first organizations to partner with them in Canada. I think it's only, you know, there's only a few companies right now working with them. There's a lot of really positive things just with the mechanics of buying tickets. Like you said, there's so many ticketing companies just trying to like make some money and do the same kind of thing. The things that I personally love about them is listings have died throughout the past little while print media has kind of vanished, and even now digital media is kind of like dying. Listings has also been a part that has gone with it. So we've depended heavily on like social media to sort of like find who's playing where and doing whatever. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're kind of putting money into, you know, Zuck's pockets when you try to lean into that. So what they have is they actually have people are so annoyed that every time I have to sign up with an app, and I understand, but they actually have an app that like, that knows what you like to listen to. And whenever in any city or in that Dice operates, they show you that show if it's ticketed within through Dice. So like it's making listings part of just like your existence again, which is really fucking cool to me. It shows you like which friends you have on the app that are already going or that are thinking about going, and like, you can actually also like put your name on a waiting list when a show happens. And if somebody doesn't want their ticket anymore, they can sell you their ticket right through that. There's these issues that we have with current ticketing that it just like resolves. They're trying to avoid the resale market with the way that their app structured. So it's like, yeah, there's a lot of problems that were solved for me. And they came to the market wanting to support, you know, independent promoters and festivals and be like, let's do this together. Because yeah, Toronto especially, you know, I've got a lot of really cool friends and people that I love that work for Live Nation and Ticketmaster in that system. But those companies do not make it really easy for independents to sort of thrive, especially as promoters and festivals when you want to get into ticketing. So it's a good company and they make it really easy to like buy tickets and to like exist in that world again. And yeah, they solve a lot of problems. But yeah, it's great. I will say it's great.
I wonder actually, because it feels like it's becoming increasingly more difficult through Live Nation and Ticketmaster to even be a band that plays at large places or be a large venue. It seems like Ticketmaster and Live Nation are trying to either monopolize so that they are the only things that are there or actively trying to put themselves out of business in a strange way, because they seem to just keep making decisions that make people very angry all the time. So I'm glad that there's something.
But they're not losing money. Like, sure, they're making people angry, but they're still selling out every large concert. Like, I mean, Toronto is just the last piece I'll say is Toronto is a city where there are two venues above the size, 600, that are not owned by Live Nation, which also owns Ticketmaster. There's two venues. There's Phoenix Concert Hall and there's a concert hall. Those are two venues. They're both about 1,000 people. Every other venue larger than 1,000 is controlled and owned by Live Nation, which owns Ticketmaster. So they can make any decision that they want. If you want to live, you're going to breathe air. If you want to see live music, you're going to interact with Live Nation, which means you're going to have to buy tickets through Ticketmaster.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's kind of, but I will say, as on the band side, I think this is the part that really gets me about that. They do kind of do a really good job when it comes to like running shows and running events.
You certainly do.
It's like, you know, I have a lot of friends that work there and they do great work. And it's like these kind of companies that grow this quickly or like, you know, want to get into a market. It's like, well, what else do they do besides buy all of this stuff? And it's hard, you know, there's ways to work with people. I think that's the one thing, is they are more open to working on things. It's just the framework they set up is not, it doesn't make it super maneuverable. And, you know, we own Transmit, we own two small independent rooms, and we work with Live Nation, we do shows with them, but it's like they do really dominate. They don't necessarily dominate within our cap ranges at the moment, but like they do really, you feel it. And when, you know, our venues are run by artists, so, you know, we don't really have a lot of capital to play with to compete. You know, we're not professionals. We operate professionally, but we're not professionals. So it is really hard, I will say. Like, it is hard. But, competition's great to a certain extent. Though we don't, in Canada, we have this thing with a couple large companies sort of running the country. Whether it's telecom or entertainment. And it's like, it just kind of sucks to feel that way. Where you go down south, you have such a huge market with all these different interesting companies. So we're trying to be, you know, one of the independents that are going to, you know, thrive.
I think to cap off this conversation, the real thing to say here is capitalism is the death of all of us.
Yes.
Yeah.
But also there is no ethical consumption under capitalism.
Yes. Yeah.
So we have to do our best to live as ethically as we can while also supporting the arts. And Live Nation is, we know great people who work there. I've seen them do great work. I've played Live Nation shows and been treated like a king before. But it is a giant company that does have a monopoly on a lot of things, and two things can be true at the same time. But again,
that's true.
Under capitalism, there is no ethical consumption. And if, as long as capitalism exists, we have to find a way to exist within it that's ethically rad. And that's my contribution to the conversation.
Especially as we sit here in the latest stage capitalism we could ever be at. The sad state that we're in. Oh, did I bring everyone down? I think I did.
It's okay. Don't worry. It's like my day-to-day life. I'm just constantly recycling that thought. So it's all good.
Well, I mean, we are dealing with a dark festival here. It's good to explore the darkness sometimes.
This is the point of this festival, is so we can deal with the rest of our life that is happening.
Yeah, I think the point of the festival is that we're going to provide 3 to 4 days of programming that will help people escape the other 361 to 362 days of crushing capitalism on them by giving them a piece of capitalism by buying tickets to a festival.
Yeah.
I mean, if it works, you gotta take the wins where you can, right? Like at this point, that's where we are.
Thank you.
let's ask a light question here. You're both in bands, you're putting on this festival, so you've probably heard a lot of different music. What's the worst musical instrument?
Bass guitar. We both play in bands that don't have a bassist.
We did have a bassist. And it was me.
Because you made a smart decision and got rid of it.
Maybe banjo. I don't know. That's pretty harsh, though.
That's pretty harsh.
I don't want to say that. I don't know. A recorder is pretty, like, no hate on recorder, great recorder players, because it all takes skill, but, like, I don't know if I can listen to it. I don't know if I could listen to a recorder concert, you know?
I'm sour against bass because the first 3 years that I was in this band that I'm in, which is a guitar and drum and that's it, every third show, some drunk dude would walk up and try to, like, talk their way into becoming our bassist. But I say this as a person who, like, bass is probably the instrument I'm most proficient at. It's probably the best instrument. If I was to just play a bass, it'd probably be the instrument I'm best at. I don't think any instruments are inherently bad. They all have a good intrinsic value. But yeah, if I never have to hear, like, a recorder again, I'll be okay.
Recorder is a super popular answer. People are very into saying recorder. I mean, I get why.
I'm also chill without harmonica.
Yeah, that comes up a lot too. Bagpipes is another one. Banjo does come up quite a bit too. So, like,
again,
good companies.
To bring this back to the beginning, I am a Korn fan, so I'm pro bagpipe.
I mean, you don't have to tell me. I am not. I guess recorder would probably be my least favorite. I've never actually had to answer that question, so I'm glad I don't have to think about it very hard.
There's good harmonica use in that Filth Pig record, Ministry. I like the harmonica in that.
Well, one of my favorite bands of all time has harmonica on every record. So, like,
Blues Traveler.
Okay, well,
not Blues Traveler.